Walker sets up deep in the pocket. Goes down the field for Smith.
Oh, he caught it! Smith ducks down 85 yards, Iowa! C.J. Besser!
Ah, oh, glorious day. That was back in 2015. Good afternoon. I am Hank Jones, and you are listening to Hank Jones Poly Sports here on Global Patriot Radio, where we can be found at blogtalkradio.com. Every Monday, 6 p.m. Eastern Time, the Vito Esposito Show featuring Vito and Big Al. Mamma Mia, no Sharia. That me Wednesdays, normally 6 p.m. Eastern, but certain days I go earlier or different, like today, since tomorrow is Thanksgiving. I am Hank Jones, and it's Hank Jones Poly Sports, where politics and sports collide. Saturday nights, midnight or 10 p.m. to midnight Eastern Time, Minister Usama Dakduk and the beautiful Christie revealing the truth about Islam. Several ways to interact, of course. You can come on live. Go to blogtalkradio.com. Look for the live button. Go down to the right-hand side. Look for chatters, and you'll see Global Patriot Radio. That's when we're chatting. You know, if you follow us, you'll get email notifications of all our shows. You can also log in, get an account, log in the chat room, and hang out with those folks that are there. Today, no one yet, but you never know. And, of course, you can always call in. 319-527-6706, as my sister and Sue from New Mexico have done thus far. I know Hawkeye Mike is not able to listen today, otherwise he'd probably be here too listening in. Meanwhile, you can always email me, hjpsports1980@gmail.com. Head into Facebook and just search Hank Jones Poly Sports, or go to Twitter, or X, formerly known as Twitter, at H Poly Sports. Poly Sports is P-O-L-I Sports, you know, for politics. Meanwhile, I am here in the official Hank Jones Poly Sports Space Force Observation Outpost. The mini Aussie will be fed at 5 o'clock today, hopefully. Or it'll be 5:30 if my wife, who is working diligently over at Acoustic Hank Land, is not able to feed her at 5 p.m. Yeah, my wife is actually working a full day today. I know many are not, but my wife is doing that. But she does have Friday off. She's got herself a four-day weekend. Good for her. No laughies today going on, and I don't want to laugh about. Although this is not going to be a maudlin show or anything like that. So last week's losses that I deem significant. Comedian Dex Carvey. Yes, the son of Dana Carvey, passed away last week, Wednesday, of a drug overdose at age 32. That's, you know, that's really sad, especially, though, when it's around the holidays. I know many of us have lost family around the holidays, and that's makes it doubly tough, no doubt. Last Thursday, we lost former NBAer and MSU Spartan, Michigan State Spartan, Jumpin' Johnny Green. He was 89. He was all but done with his NBA career, and then at the age of 35, he placed a call to Cincinnati Royals general manager Bob Cousy. He was signed. He played four seasons of his best basketball. He retired from the relocated Royals. They had eventually then had moved to Kansas City and become the Kansas City Kings, now Sacramento Kings. He retired after the 1972-73 season at age 39. That day we also lost former drummer and songwriter for Kool and the Gang, George Funky Brown, to lung cancer at age 74. He had songwriting credits on two of their biggest hits, Ladies' Night and Celebration. Last Friday we lost, if you want to call it that, it's not really a loss maybe, Haitian-born Canadian Hells Angels member Gregory Woolley in a shooting in Quebec at the age of 51. He was noted for the fact that as a black man, he rose to a position of prominence, some prominence in the traditionally all-white Hells Angels. We also lost actress Suzanne Shepherd. She appeared in several shows, one most famous, The Sopranos. She appeared in 20 episodes of that. And she was also in the classic gang film, Goodfellas, where she played the mother of Karen Freed Hill, i.e. the mother-in-law of Henry Hill, the main character in the movie Goodfellas.
Where have you been, Henry?
Sunday, we lost former First Lady Rosalynn Carter at age 96. She had suffered from dementia for an undisclosed period. Her husband, Jimmy Carter, remains the oldest and longest surviving president. It was actually he that went into hospice, well, roughly a year ago. After they left D.C., she and her husband continued their advocacy for mental health, as well as being instrumental in the growth and expansion of Habitat for Humanity. She is the longest married First Lady, and she is the second longest surviving First Lady behind Bess Truman. We also lost British actor Joss Ackland at age 95. His most notable roles, Tinker Tailor, Soldier Spy, The Hunt for Red October, and White Mischief. He also appeared in a movie called The Sicilian. It was poorly adapted version of the original Mario Puzo novel. This was interesting. After the film The Godfather Part II, in 1983 or 4, he then wrote a book called The Sicilian. It blended the real-life mobster or Sicilian bandit Salvatore Giuliano and the fictional American mobster from The Godfather, Michael Corleone. And frankly, the book had such promise. But alas, the film absolutely blew the opportunity. Monday, we lost saxophonist Mars Williams to ampullary cancer at age 68. He played with the Waitresses and the Psychedelic Furs, among others. As I've mentioned it before, if you would, please continue prayers for Felicia Goodson and her family. She let me know, as I said, via Twitter, her ex, formerly known as Twitter, that she had been diagnosed with cancer just over a year ago. Very sweet lady. Still one of my favorite guests and one of my favorite shows in the history of this show. It was truly a privilege getting to talk with her at the time and to communicate with her. Please add her and family to your prayers if you have not already. Hey, don't forget my friends at Alliance Communications, Central Florida's 24-hour call center for messaging and answering services for your medical clinic, hospital clinic, information gathering service, survey, government entity, believe it or not. Or if you're one of those companies that never returned to an office after the COVID pandemic, they're perfect. You're a perfect match. They could be your front line, and your staff can actually work. They also work with remote staff, which is obviously an advantage as we come into snowstorm season. So if you are one of those that needs their services or would love to try the idea of working with them, give them a call, 800-555-3738, or look them up on the web at alliancecommunications.com. Here's our quickies for today, our news items. Let's get right to it. First, in New York, the Rainbow Bridge between Niagara Falls, New York, and Niagara Falls in Canada. FBI investigating a vehicle explosion there. Two dead, probably it sounds like the two that were in the vehicle, was heading from the U.S. to Canada, going in the direction of the border officer building. Now all bridges are closed. All government buildings were evacuated. Explosion was so big and fierce, authorities first thought it was a terror attack. Now they probably are going to try and... international border crossing points between the U.S. and Canada in western New York are closed. Also injured a 27-year-old male taken to Niagara Falls Memorial Hospital with minor injuries, including back pain and minor cuts. Not considered severe. FBI is coordinating with local, state, and federal law enforcement. Say the situation is very fluid. That's all they can say at this time. New York Governor Kathy Hochul said she is traveling to Buffalo. She's been briefed on the situation that occurred at Rainbow Bridge. At her direction, the New York State Police is actively working with the FBI Joint Terrorism Task Force to monitor all points of entry in New York. New York City Mayor Eric Adams said that New York Police Department has enhanced security. That's funny. After wanting to defund them, says that NYPD and our team have been closely monitoring the situation on the ground in Buffalo after an explosion at the Rainbow Bridge, and we've already sent officers upstate to support efforts on the ground. City is already on heightened alert due to the upcoming holiday, so they have enhanced security. Public will see increased security at locations across New York City. Peace Bridge, Lewiston-Queenston Bridge, and the Whirlpool Bridge are also closed. Buffalo Airport said travelers can expect additional security measures. FAA later announced Buffalo International Airport is closed to all arriving and departing international flights. Yeah. Cars coming into the Buffalo Airport will undergo security checks. The Buffalo and Niagara Falls airports are fully operational. Chuck Schumer is closely monitoring the situation. You'll all be happy to hear that. Thank you to our brave first responders. You know, it's funny. These people always say thoughts and prayers, words after a gun-related situation. But in this case, thank you to our brave first responders. Can't even discuss the fact that it's probably terrorism. Jack wagons. Oh, Senator Kirsten Gillibrand posted on X, formerly known as Twitter, please avoid the area and follow the guidance of law enforcement and first responders. Good advice. So there's that. Right at our holiday time. Now, right below that article on the Fox News website, subtitled They're Here, article is titled Hamas Terror Organization Charter Targets Christians and U.S. Service Organizations. Yeah. So it says, so basically, they're warning us that Hamas is here. Here's the article. It says, you may be surprised, but Hamas does not call for only killing Jews and eliminating Israel. Yeah, we kind of knew that. Christian, a member of another religion, or even participate in your local Rotary Club or the Lions. Hamas also considers you an enemy, too. They can't say mine, which is Kiwanis International, because they probably can't say Kiwanis. Middle East expert and author Waleed Fares says Hamas is using Gaza as an umbrella to be legitimate. The reality is this is a jihadist movement, and it is manifesting itself in America and Canada and in Western Europe. We have never been at this level of danger for our democratic world. Says the Hamas charter seeks to expand Islam to become the controlling religion across the globe and target any non-believer, which includes mainstream America. For their part, Rotary and Lions have said, hey, we're non-political. We're we're sectarian. We're non-religious, non-political. Unbelievable, isn't it? Article 22 of the Hamas Charter mentions an unexpected subject for its call for jihad. Quote, the American as apple pie business, community, and charitable organizations found throughout the nation. Freemasonry is also on the list. It's amazing, isn't it? That's called for, and I guarantee you no mainstream organization, aside from Fox News, is even mentioning that. But it goes to show, these people are, they're animals. They don't care about you or me. Oh, sure, they hate Jews worse, but they don't care for average you or me either. Susan Sarandon is back in the news. Sarandon is back in the news, as you might guess. It is not positive. Rarely is it positive when she's in the news. TA, after a pro-Palestinian rally in which she made comments amid the Israel-Hamas war, contentions continue to mount in Hollywood. United Talent Agency has dropped actor Susan Sarandon as a client. She made comments and called for a ceasefire. She says, there are a lot of people that are afraid of being Jewish at this time and are getting a taste of what it feels like to be a Muslim in this country, she said at the rally. UTA, United Talent, confirmed. They said, when Susan Sarandon said that Jews are getting a taste of what it feels like to be a Muslim in this country, she was saying that American Jews have it coming, that we don't deserve to live free from harassment and assault, wrote Aviva Klopas, co-founder of the pro-Israel nonprofit Boundless Israel. Says the agency's decision to drop Sarandon comes as the entertainment industry is grappling with how to respond to the Israel-Hamas war. Actor Melissa Barrera is no longer appearing in the film Scream 7. Jesus, they have 7 of those now. After she shared pro-Palestinian statements on social media that some believe crossed the line into anti-Semitic territory. She wrote, Gaza is currently being treated like a concentration camp. Cornering everyone together with nowhere to go, no electricity, no water. People have learned nothing from our histories, and just like our histories, people are still silently watching it all happen. This is genocide and ethnic cleansing. Her representatives did not return a request for comment. Spyglass, which is producing this Scream sequel, said it has zero tolerance for anti-Semitism. Says their stance is unequivocally clear. We have zero tolerance for anti-Semitism or the incitement of hate in any form, including false references to genocide, ethnic cleansing, Holocaust distortion, or anything that flagrantly crosses the line into hate speech. The Writers Guild of America decided not to weigh in on the issue because there was a lack of consensus among its members. Consensus? Says that inaction upset some Jewish writers. The union should issue a statement. I don't know. Susan Sarandon says, there's a terrible thing that's happened where anti-Semitism has been confused with speaking up against Israel. I am against anti-Semitism. I am against Islamophobia. Well, then you wouldn't have said what you said if that were true. You said Jews are now starting to understand what it feels like to be Muslim. What? And she wonders why she gets dropped. It's not hard. Not hard to understand. Really, really unbelievable. I mean, how is it become so twisted, so distorted, to turn Israel into the second coming of the Nazis? How the hell is that? On what planet did that happen? I mean, how? What distortion? It's unbelievable. Unbelievable. So today marks the 60th anniversary of the assassination of President John F. Kennedy. And, of course, all kind of, you know, as happens every time some sort of anniversary comes up, 25th, 30th, 40th, whatever, 50th, 60th. So Epic Times weighed in. It says, JFK assassination doctors break silence, dispute key government claim. I don't even know if any of them would be alive at this point. Several doctors who were in the emergency room raised serious doubts about the official narrative that says a lone gunman was responsible. It's a documentary that features interviews that were conducted in 2013, so 10 years ago. The Warren Commission, of course, established that two shots fired by Lee Harvey Oswald One entered his upper back and exited near his larynx. The other entered the right side of his head and exited via his forehead. Former president was breathing when he entered Parkland Hospital before he was pronounced dead about a half hour later. I did not realize that. I thought he was gone by then. However, what seven doctors said in that recent footage 10 years ago disputes the commission's claims. Say the recollections were precise and clear. They reacted strongly when the autopsy pictures were projected on a screen. They didn't agree on everything, but it became obvious that the way the president looked at Parkland did not match the autopsy photos taken at Bethesda, even before the official autopsy began. Those who witnessed the wound of the president's neck believed it was an entrance wound, not an exit wound. Several of them saw the gaping hole in the back of JFK's head. Apparently, one Dr. Malcolm Perry, who attended to both Kennedy and Oswald, described the throat wound, said he thought it looked like an entrance wound at a press conference. He was supposedly then told that you must never, ever say that was an entrance wound again if you know what's good for you. Dr. McClellan said he believed in all probability there was a conspiracy, i.e. there was more than one shooter. Another said if Mr. Oswald was in the sixth floor depository, how could he have been shot? How could Kennedy have been shot from the front? Another said, how could a gunshot from the rear peel the scalp from front to back? Well, I think it's pretty clear that elements within our government, whether it was the intelligence community, the military, government at large, some maybe even elected, there was clearly something going on. And, you know, stuff is supposed to be released all the time, and then it doesn't get released. Only partial stuff gets released. And my feeling is this, and I'd say it any other time, I don't think we'll ever know the whole story. Not so much because it's not good for America to know. And frankly, I'm not sure it's all that great anyway, that it means anything at this point. I mean, does anybody care whether or not the story you hear about Julius Caesar's murder is assassination is accurate? No. Only people that are alive or were alive at the time of President Kennedy's assassination really care that much. I think it's clear, however, that though it may not have been the beginning, it's certainly one key event in our history that points up how untrustworthy much of our government has become. Like I said, I don't care at this point. It's not to say I'm hardened to it, but at this point, what does it really matter? I mean, we kind of know that it wasn't Lee Harvey Oswald acting alone. He may have patsy and not fired anything, or what he fired didn't hit. Seems pretty evident over the years that he was not a marksman in any way, shape, or form, and was not considered a good shot by those who knew him. So what does it matter? I'm not sure it does at this point. 60 years later, we're still talking about it. I mean, I'm not going to be that guy of going through evidence and all that. Go online. Go on different streaming or cable networks. You're going to find something all the time. Daily. And there's going to be two camps, really. Those who think Oswald was only a small part of it, and that it was those within our government. And then the idiots who always say, it was George Bush, George H.W. Bush. I mean, to some people, the Bush family is responsible for everything bad that ever happened until President Trump came along, of course, and then he became the worst thing that ever happened and is responsible for everything bad that's ever happened in this country. Take a quick second to note and to thank Duck Northwest Media and Boyd the Alaskan for dropping into the chat room today. If you're so inclined, come on in. They bring good stuff. But no, back to the President Kennedy thing. I don't know. I mean, you know, I've watched the movie JFK and we're told how much of it was Oliver Stone taking artistic license. Good. It's a great movie. I mean, you may not like what it said or may dispute the facts or the factuality of the movie itself, but it's a great movie. It's a very well-made movie. And it's, you know, it's really not a surprise given the people that were in it. I mean, from Gary Oldman, his portrayal of Lee Harvey Oswald, to Kevin Costner and his portrayal of former DA and later Judge Garrison of Louisiana, to those in his supporting office, to those like Jack Lemmon, Ed Asner. I mean, it's a very well-made movie. It's a riveting movie. But I'm not sure at this point that the specific and the minute details matter. I think it's safe to say forces within our government, including our military and our intelligence apparatus, were involved or probably knew at a minimum. Was the mafia involved? A lot of people talk about that. And I will say that Stone in his movie makes a good point. Much as the mob had power back then, as he said, he asked, would the mob be able to alter the parade route or call off protection? Probably not. Not then and not now. So again, it becomes very obvious that this is a key moment in history, in American history, at which people understand that our government is not entirely trustworthy. It's become too big. It's become overly filled with people who are self-serving, who are not serving in government, thriving in government. I think it's pretty obvious that it has a devastating effect at any time. I mean, if it were to happen, if it had happened to, say, President Obama or Jimmy Carter or Joseph Biden or President Trump, it's a devastating impact on this country. People say they don't like one president or the other. We should never be wishing for assassination of a president, of an American president, ever. Ever. I think when people call for Joe Biden to resign, I think that's perfectly okay. I think I'm a little flabbergasted that there are those on the left who say, I can't believe you're saying it. You spent 4 years doing it with President Trump. Why are you shocked? You all but gave a blueprint, the modern version of the blueprint for calling for a president's resignation. I remember a friend of mine, a childhood friend who I don't really consider much of a friend anymore, but I remember for about the first month after President Trump was elected or took office, he was going on with hashtag resign every day on Facebook. First of all, what a shitty, shitty way to live. Waking up every day so you can get on social media and hashtag resign. I mocked him one day and said, this is what I said, I'll parrot you. Hashtag resign. Directed it to Joe Biden. So yeah, it's devastating on the country. People remember where they were when it happened. Just like people remember where they were when RFK got shot or Martin Luther King or when a shuttle blew up. Or I remember vividly myself watching television during the Munich massacre, watching Jim McKay. They are profound events. They have a profound effect on our psyche. And we should learn from them, obviously. But at a certain point, it's time to move on, too. I mean, you know, it's fun. It's interesting watching to see some of the development, but time to move on. And I would say that in this case as well. So, like I said, it's a short show today, so I'm taking a quick break, and then I'm coming back with more lighthearted stuff. Sports and giving thanks, really, because there's a lot to be thankful for, at least in my life, and I think in most people's lives. So be back in about 2 minutes and 43 seconds. Let's listen to a song called, or a tune called Gathering Crowds. You hear it for baseball and football broadcasts. Gathering Crowds, perfect for this time of year. You are listening to Hank Jones Poly Sports. It is Wednesday, November 22nd, 2023. And let's move on to some lighter stuff. Because there's a lot going on that's fun and good. Good article from ESPN talking from sort of an opinion from Wake Forest head football coach Dave Clawson. So over the offseason, this previous offseason, he had a player by the name of Sam Hartman, quarterback, had been at Wake Forest for 5 seasons. So he transferred in the transfer portal and using the NIL, the name, image, and likeness, got a bunch of money to go to Notre Dame. Well, Wake Forest happened to be playing Notre Dame last week in South Bend. So said Wake Forest coach Dave Clawson isn't exactly thrilled with the send-off his former quarterback is getting at Notre Dame. Irish honored Sam Hartman during his final home game. Clawson, however, wasn't so sure that it warranted a celebration. He said Notre Dame only dated Hartman. Wake Forest recruited and developed the quarterback over 5 seasons. He says Notre Dame bought him and rented him for a year, and now they love him. This is where college football is. His point being that Hartman left Wake Forest with a year of eligibility remaining and mirrored a concern many smaller programs have about retaining top talent developed in-house. Notre Dame played the song "I will always love you" as Hartman exited the field. Clawson said, "When that video played, it's just like, holy cow, this is where college football is." He said, "Sam and I had a great discussion before and after the game, and I love the young man. I really do. I don't blame him at all for what he did. That's the system now. For him to have the opportunity to have that experience and make that type of money in 1 year, who can fault him?" He said, "That's the reality. There's no point in complaining about it. Here's a guy that we recruited and we developed. They're putting a video on him saying, 'We will always love you.' Like, you only dated him for a couple of months. It can't be love. We're the ones that love him. We had 5 years with him. You rented him for a season." Beautifully said. Beautifully said. And that's, you know, we're going to see more of that, of course, name, image, and likeness over the next several years. It'll get bad enough that something will have to be. I mean, even now, the NCAA is begging Congress to come up with guidelines. Jeez, that's the very last thing we want, by the way. On to other things, Michigan and head coach Jim Harbaugh have had quite a turnaround and accepted their Big Ten suspension of three games, the final three games of this regular season. Michigan then fired their linebacker coach, Chris Partridge. Apparently, Chris Partridge may have been working to mess with computers that had details about their advanced scouting scheme. Not coincidentally, the key figure, former Michigan football assistant Connor Stallions, put out a tweet back when he was hired full-time by the Wolverines. The gist, basically thanking and praising and lauding his bestest buddy. But yeah, none of the assistants, none of the staff knew any of this was happening. Unbelievable. New college football playoff rankings are out. By the way, the Iowa Hawkeyes lost a spot after winning. And again, so did Florida State. But Florida State had it happen after losing their starting quarterback. We lost our starting quarterback weeks ago, and before that, our tight end number one, and after that, our tight end number two. We've lost numerous offensive linemen. We also lost Big Ten preseason defensive player of the year, Cooper DeJean. But yeah, drop us. So anyway, here's the top 10. Georgia, Ohio State, Michigan remain the same, 1-3. The new number four is Washington, who basically escaped with a two-point win over Oregon State, who did drop. Number five is Florida State, who dropped. Number six, Oregon. Seven, Texas. Eight, Alabama. Nine, Missouri. 10, Louisville. Those remain the same. As I said, the Hawkeyes dropped from 16 to 17, despite the win. In for the first time is 11-0 Liberty, while Tulane is the highest group of five at 23. James Madison, who was suing for a bowl, suing for postseason availability, lost to Appalachian State in overtime. They have dropped any lawsuit, any action, amongst other happenings. Iowa Hawkeye Noah Shannon is still not playing after being told 6 weeks ago he was cleared to practice and they were probably going to revisit and rework the penalties for gambling. Now, Noah Shannon placed exactly one bet on the Iowa Hawkeye women's basketball team. He did not bet on football, did not bet on any games in which his team played, but he still lost a year of eligibility, which was this year, his final season. But, as I've said all along, he's a class act. In the class act that he is, he has stayed part of the Hawkeye team. He was an honorary captain for last Saturday's final home game of 2023. He also got to walk with his teammates as part of Senior Day. Boils down to this. I really hope one day when they obliterate the NCAA, and when I say obliterate, blow it up, form a new thing, I don't know. But it will get obliterated someday. When it is, I hope that Noah Shannon is front and center. At a minimum, he is one of the poster children that commemorates this obliteration. The Butkus Award finalists have been named for 2023. Historically, of course, it is an award given to the best linebacker at various levels of football, high school, college, and pro. No longer, though, is it the award given to the best college linebacker. This year's list of finalists does not include this year's best college linebacker, Iowa Hawkeye Jay Higgins. Inexplicably, he is not among the five finalists. And class act that both Jay and his father, Roy, are, Roy tweeted out, please stay away from being negative and away from the low-class comments. Roy noted, it isn't a knock on Jay's character or who he is. However, in my opinion, it is, in my humble opinion, it is a slight to his amazing season and his play on the field as the best linebacker in college football. I called it. You can listen to my shows. I called it at the end of last season. I called it the beginning of this season or in the summer. I said he is going to be the impact player for Iowa. And for those that don't believe in me or don't know, I saw it as early as 2021. I used to wonder why he wasn't on the field more. Well, he wasn't on the field more because he was playing behind some damn good linebackers. But he was on the field. He just wasn't starting. He wasn't the guy. He was playing behind Jack Campbell and Seth Benson and, at the time, Justin Jacobs. But he was on the field a lot. He was on the field in third and short situations. And he was getting to the ball always. I mean, anytime you saw the replay, Jay Higgins was there, number 34. He's always around the ball. He just had that knack for knowing where to be. Jack Campbell had it, of course, last year's Butkus Award winner. But Jay Higgins has it. And you can see he's just a humble kid, just the nicest kid. And it's not a shock. If you follow his father on Twitter, his name is Roy. It's at Higginized. Go on and give him a follow. Give him a look on X, formerly known as Twitter. He's a great guy. Super friendly, super nice. Nobody bleeds black and gold more than Roy Higgins at this point. But when you see him, when you interact with him, you'll understand why Jay is the kind of kid he is. Ole Miss, number 12, Ole Miss goes to Mississippi State for the annual Egg Bowl. They play every Thanksgiving Day now. Unranked, Texas San Antonio, UTSA, they are 8-3, and they play at number 23 Tulane. So this is not going to be a gimme. This could well affect what Group of Five team gets in as the New Year's Six. Number 16, Oregon State, goes to number 6, Oregon. Do not think for a second. Tough loss to Washington last week, but do not think for a second that Oregon State wouldn't love to end Oregon's time in the Pac-12 by knocking them out of college football playoff contention. Oregon State and Washington State, the only two schools in the Pac-12 that are left out, they have nowhere to go. Opinions on that, but they're the only ones that are not joining another conference next year. They've been abandoned by their conference mates. And in their cases, they have other schools within their state that are going to major college conferences. I think it would be beautiful if they did pull it off. I don't think they will, but it would be awesome if they did. The Big Ten has two Black Friday games in addition to that, what we just heard about Oregon State being on Friday. Big Ten's got two. Hawkeyes head to Lincoln to play Nebraska at noon. Believe it or not, that game's on CBS. You know how long it's been since CBS covered a Big Ten game? And then number 11, Penn State, goes to East Lansing, presumably to beat up on the Spartans. Now, Saturday is loaded with good games. Kentucky at number 10, Louisville. Texas A&M, post-firing of Jimbo Fisher, is at number 14, LSU. Number 8, Alabama, goes to Auburn for the Iron Bowl. Although that may not be as great a game. Auburn got bitch slapped last Saturday at home, 31-10, by New Mexico State. Yeah, week 11 is the week when the SEC teams play, or 10 and 11, really, weeks 10 and 11, the SEC teams have non-conference games at late in the season. So in other words, they're not about to lose their status, their rankings, et cetera, at that point. Purposely, they feast on cupcakes. Well, New Mexico State wouldn't hear of it. They absolutely crushed Auburn. Number 15, Arizona, is going to Arizona State, who is 3-8, but they always play each other tough. The Apple Cup. 5-6 Washington State. They want a bowl. Winning this Friday gets them a bowl. In addition, it would ruin number 4 Washington's last season in the Pac-12. And probably knock them out of the college football playoff. Number 5, Florida State, without Jordan Travis, goes to Gainesville to play the Gators. Also 5-6. Also fighting for a bowl. Big game in Columbia, South Carolina. Number 24, Clemson, and the South Carolina Gamecocks. North Carolina takes on North Carolina State. This is weird. North Carolina State is now the ranked team. North Carolina spent most of the season ranked, a little bit in the top 10. No longer. Iowa State, fighting for a good bowl, better bowl, heads to Manhattan, Kansas. Big one against number 19, Kansas State. And, of course, at noon on Fox, the game, as it's called, number 2, Ohio State, at Ann Arbor to take on number 3, Michigan, who is favored by 3. First time in 5 years Michigan has been favored in this game. To the Hawkeyes, they pulled it out last Saturday with a 15-13 win over Illinois. The Hawkeyes got an early safety, then got a touchdown. Illinois scored as well, and the Hawkeyes were down 13-9 going into the fourth quarter. With just under 5 minutes, Hawkeyes got a 30-yard touchdown run from Caleb Johnson. Defense then forced a turnover on downs, and the Hawkeyes ran out the clock. Wide receiver Caleb Brown also looked good. Quarterback Deacon Hill had a solid turnover-free game. And, of course, punter Torrey Taylor was his usual amazing self. Hawkeyes definitely missed Cooper DeJean defense, although I think our defensive backfield did a very good job. But we missed him as a punt returner. We missed him on punt coverage. Although Caden Weechen had a good punt return to set up the winning TD drive. Now, here's another thing. Teams have been punting away from Cooper DeJean in recent weeks, or punting short and high to mitigate any returns. So Caden Weechen did get a good return to set up that winning TD drive. The difference in the score, of course, not surprisingly, was the safety that the defense got early in the game. Now, look, it wasn't a beautiful win. A lot of lost opportunities, but we could literally have been going into that last quarter instead of down 13-9. Had a missed field goal, had some other opportunities. We did punt inside the 50-yard line early in the game, but that, of course, brought the safety on the next series of downs. So you can't say that was a bad thing necessarily. This week, the Hawks go to Nebraska. There's actually a lot to play for. Number one, last year, there was a non-called helmet-to-helmet block, and I put block in air quotes. This guy blocked Cooper DeJean, knocked him out of the game. Literally shoved his helmet under his face mask and blocked him. Knocked him out of the game. The result was a couple of long Nebraska pass touchdowns. We also had a fumbled punt by replacement punt returner Arlen Bruce IV, who, of course, is... He had transferred out, but he's not playing at Oklahoma State because he's off the team because he was accused of betting on games in which he played for the Hawkeyes. Many think he may have shaped points. He had a run against Iowa State that was wide open and fell on the 3-yard line. He had a fumbled punt last year in that Nebraska game. Plus the woeful offense that just couldn't move the ball. Nebraska basically stole the Heroes Trophy. I'm not saying they didn't earn it, but they stole it. They got lucky. Hawkeyes want that back, both for pride and, frankly, to send off offensive coordinator Brian Ferentz very nicely. Now, Brian Ferentz was terminated after they lost to Minnesota right before the Northwestern game. He was terminated. He's informed he is not back next year, or as the athletic director Beth Goetz put it in her press release, is his final year with the program. Fine. It wasn't a bad decision, I don't think. I think the timing was terrible, but it wasn't a bad decision. I think the writing was on the wall. I know Kirk Ferentz wasn't happy, but I think he was more unhappy about how it went down and when it went down. That said, Brian Ferentz has, you know, it was nice to see him on the sideline with his players, giving him a Gatorade bath. father embracing. And frankly, that last touchdown, I don't, you know, it's not all Brian Ferentz, but the offensive staff saw it. Illinois, you may have watched, was playing single high safety. And I mean, when I mean a single safety deep, but I mean 20, 25 yards deep. When you watch the replay of Caleb Johnson's touchdown, you don't even see the safety enter the screen, really, until Caleb Johnson's on about the 10-yard line. And the guy took a terrible angle. Caleb Johnson ran right past him. So give credit to if not to Brian Ferentz, at least to the offensive coaches. Because a couple times before that, we'd run a couple plays in the line, and people were saying, why are we doing that? Well, because the coaches saw it. All it took was that one time for Caleb Johnson to get to the second level. And what he did, it was pretty simple. And they were playing single high safety. God, you have to watch it. He's not even in the screen, the Illinois safety. So, yeah, another win puts that trophy back in the Hawkeye trophy case. And it keeps the Hawkeyes looking good for a New Year's Six Bowl, should they win the Big Ten championship game the following weekend. But it gives the Hawkeyes a real reason to game Saturday between Ohio State and Michigan. They would have an extra day of rest over that the winner of that game. Anything could happen in Indianapolis the following weekend. Now, look, most people aren't calling for the Hawks to win. I myself would agree. I don't expect it. But I didn't expect us to beat Northwestern after Brian Ferentz was let go. I did not expect it. I didn't expect us to beat Wisconsin. I kind of expected us to beat Minnesota, but, I mean, you know, that really the Big Ten refereeing crews, 10 itself, because of the way that punt return against Minnesota was overturned, is going to look really stupid. An 11-1 Hawkeye team going into Indianapolis, whoa, but no, it's a 10-2 team if they win Friday. But they get an extra day of rest. So that's a good thing. And moving on, giving thanks. I know we say, you know, this country's going to hell. Society's going to hell. Everything. Folks, we have so much to be grateful for. At least I know I do. I'm grateful for the chance that Vito and Al gave me to do this show. And for those that have supported, that have listened along, that have followed me on Twitter, that have interacted on Twitter. I'm so grateful for that. I don't do this for money. I do it for love, and it's fun. It is fun. But I'm so grateful for it. For those of you listening, whether up close or just in the background, I'm grateful for that, truly. I'm grateful for my Twitter and Facebook friends, some whom I haven't had been in touch with in so long, some I've never met in person. My friends, my longstanding ones who I've known since as a kid, through high schools, and my college friends, many of whom with whom I stay in touch. I'm so grateful for that. A truly great and very fun job. I got out of family business. It changed when my father was no longer alive, and I didn't have the most fun running it. I lost the enthusiasm. But when I sold it at the beginning of last year, didn't sell it for much, didn't make enough to retire on or anything like that, but I got bills paid off. But I had friends who needed full-time help, and it led to me being a paddleboard and kayak guide, a tour guide. It's the best job in the world. I have no stress in the traditional sense. I mean, stress to me is when we don't see manatees up in the spring somewhere. Stress is when we don't see dolphins out in the intercoastal. Stress is when a space launch gets delayed. That's my level of stress now. Oh, sure. I mean, there could be others. People showing up that I don't know have had reservations. Getting a flat tire on the truck or the trailer, taking, you know, vessels out for a tour. Okay, that's fine. That's not stress, folks. That's inconvenience. Having a truly, truly incredible family. A baby brother who... Brother Tommy's been on the show, although Brother Tommy has his quirks. He is my brother, and he's an awesome brother. two local sisters and then a third sister who happens to be listening. She's long distance. One of my two local sisters who I will spend Thanksgiving with. My wife and my daughter, who I treasure, my son-in-law, a great father-in-law, brother-in-law, and several sisters and other brothers-in-law, nieces and nephews. I had truly one-of-a-kind parents. It devastates me to hear people that didn't. So I had that. But mainly, you know, I live in a country where I can worship the God I believe in. I can say what I feel. Oh, sure, there are sometimes consequences for people, but we live in a country, we're not ruled by some despot per se, people knocking down our door every day. So I'm truly grateful for this country, what it still means right now. So think about that. We live in a great country. We have great people here. And I'm lucky. I'm blessed. And I hope that you all are too. Well, folks, that's it for today. I wish you all a happy Thanksgiving. I wish you a great weekend, a safe weekend, and a lovely holiday season coming up. Good night, and God bless you all, and God bless America. Amen.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.